Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have back as my guest Garnett Schulthauser, who is the author of Dance of Heavenly Bliss, Divine Inspiration for Humanity. Garnett was on the radio show probably about a year ago, where we interviewed him on the book Dancing on a Stamp, which outlines the first book that he did on this topic. And he is a retired attorney who lives near Victoria on Vancouver Island. And he's had quite an interesting career after that of being a lawyer, and that his guides have helped him understand a lot of why we're here on Earth, what our lessons are, what help is available to us, which is really extensive, and how we can take advantage of that, and then a lot of information about what lies ahead of us on the side of spirit. Thanks for joining us, Garnett.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. I enjoyed the first show very much, and I'm certainly looking forward to this one.
Well, would you give us a little background on yourself, including maybe the story of the homeless man that got you started on this endeavor?
Right. Well, I practiced law for about 34 years, corporate law in Calgary, then one day in 2007, on a sunny afternoon in May, I was taking a stroll down the streets, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a homeless man just jumped out in front of me and stopped me in my tracks. And he looked like a typical homeless man. He had long, stringy hair and a scraggly beard and dirty, slept-in clothes. But there was something very different about this guy, because he had these amazing, dazzling blue eyes that they seemed to be penetrating deep within me, right down to the depths of my soul. And I sensed that he knew everything about me, everything I'd ever said or done in my life, which was very strange because I'd never met this man before. And at the same time, and the reason I didn't sort of feel violated by this man's gaze was because his eyes were sending me this wave of pure, unconditional love that was infusing my whole body with an amazing sense of peace, security, and well-being. So it was really quite a euphoric feeling, and I just stood there like a deer caught in the headlights, enjoying the gaze from this homeless man that I had never met before. And I'm not sure how long I stood there, but then he finally broke the spell by saying to me, "Why are you here?" And then he promptly disappeared into a nearby store. And when I finally collected my wits, I decided I should go and try to find this man, find out who he was and why did he stop me. So I went into the store he had disappeared into, but he was nowhere to be seen. And there was only one entrance and one exit, and he hadn't come out, but he was not in the store anywhere. So I went back onto the street, and I walked up and down hoping to spot him, but he had seemingly disappeared into thin air. So the next day I resolved to go back to that street to find him. So I went back on the same street, same time of day, and I walked up and down hoping I could find him. And eventually, after 10 or 15 minutes of searching in vain, I spotted him sitting all alone on a bench. And so I went up to him and I said, "Who are you and why did you stop me the other day?" And he said, "I'm a soul just like you. I'm here to answer your questions and help you on your journey." And that was the beginning of a dialogue that I had with this man that went off and on for the next several months. And I found out his name was Albert, and he was actually one of my spirit guides in disguise. And he had manifested himself in physical form for me to sort of bring me into the conversation and to answer my questions. And he told me, much to my surprise, after the first couple of meetings, that I was the only person who could actually see him in physical form. I could see him and I could touch him. He was actually flesh and bones to me, but he said no one else could have seen him. Mm-hmm. And after the first three meetings, he appeared as appearing as the homeless man. He no longer showed up in physical form, and he was just a voice in my head. We communicated thereafter by telepathy for the most part of our dialogue. Then he surprised me after we'd gotten into our dialogue for a while by saying to me, "You know, I'm not just here to answer your questions and satisfy your curiosity. I want you to write a book about my revelations." Mm-hmm. And that resulted in my very first book, Dancing on a Stamp. And then...
I'm sorry, we all have spirit guides, is that right?
Yes, we do.
And these spirit guides, according to your book, Dance of Heavenly Bliss, when you met some of your other spirit guides, it was explained that these are often souls that we travel with who know us very well and volunteer to help us, especially with particular lessons. And what I found interesting is that the spirit guides change throughout your life. Like, you might have had attorney spirit guides when you were an attorney, but then when you're a writer, you have different guides with different talents.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that sums it up pretty well. Yes, we all have spirit guides, two or three, and sometimes some of us have many more. And they're basically like our life coaches. They are spirits on the spirit side. They are constantly coaching us, encouraging us to get the most out of our journeys. They send us messages all the time to try to steer us in the right direction. The right direction being, of course, the path that we had planned for ourselves before we were born. And so they're 24/7. They're always with us, and they do change over time because depending on what stage of life we're at, we sometimes need different experience, different expertise, and so they do rotate. Some of them may stay with us throughout our lives, and others may rotate. And you're right. They very often they are part of our soul group, and a soul group is just a group of souls that we travel with through the dense planes and experience different lives together, often changing our roles. So in one life, the person who is your father in this life may have been your nephew in another life, and we constantly change genders and change roles, traveling with our soul group. And so our guides are often members of our soul group who have had experiences on Earth and perhaps even previous lives with us. And so they have a lot of experience about how to maneuver through this Earth school that we're in. And so they're there to lend us their wisdom and their experience as part of their coaching duties while we sort of travel through Earth. So, yeah, spirit guides are a very important part of our journeys, even though most of us are not aware that we even have any.
I'm aware of a number of mine. I had this very interesting experience as a surgeon. I had this guy who had half his face taken off in a car accident, and he was bleeding very, very badly. And, you know, I couldn't do anything to control the bleeding. And so I said in my mind, I said, is this guy supposed to die or what? And my spirit guide says, no, he's not. And then they showed me exactly what to do. I had to pack everything. His sinuses were bleeding a lot, and I had to pack everything. And then I sent him down to CT for a CAT scan because he had come directly to the operating room, and we needed some time, we needed more information, and so I did exactly what I was guided to do, and then, of course, he did fine and went on to be reconstructed. He was a former police officer who was hit by a drunk driver, and now he has nonprofits to help people understand, teenagers and young people understand that driving drunk is not a good idea. So that was probably my first experience with my spirit guide that was a surgeon. But I also have spirit guides that are medical doctors, and one requested to join my team in medicine. He had been the doctor of another person in my meditation group who had high blood pressure when he was very young, and so this doctor had been a very remarkable doctor and was very, very understanding and really understood medicine very well. But he died, I think, in his 50s of a heart condition. And he came to our meditation session and through my other friends spoke and asked to join my medical team. And so I have a medical team that helps me diagnose illness and treat difficult infections in the breast implant patients. And then, like yourself, I've written books. And so I know I have spirit guides that are writers as well, because, you know, that guidance is very, very different, obviously, than medicine or surgery. So, but it's very wonderful to have these guides available.
It is indeed, and that's a very fascinating story you have, Susan, because and you're very fortunate you had sort of direct communication, direct guidance from your guides. A lot of people don't get those messages so directly and aren't aware of their guides trying to help them. So you're very fortunate to be in that position, and I certainly encourage you to continue to listen for their guidance, whether it be medical guidance or writing guidance. But we all have that guidance, and it's really there to help us ease our journey through life and to help us with all the difficult decisions and matters that we face every day. So they're really great life coaches, and I'm really thrilled to hear that there are other people besides me who have that sort of direct guidance from their spirit guides.
You are not alone. I wanted to tell you about my friend who is very much involved in spiritual advice for other people. And we were just talking one day and trying to figure out how many spirit guides we had. And I do a lot of different things. So I have around 20. And, you know, I'm in business. I have a very large business. I have, you know, medicine, surgery, writing, spiritual stuff, you know, so radio show, you know, all sorts of stuff. So I have a number of different areas, and that's probably why I have that many guides. And maybe they're not all active at once, but those are the people available to me if I need them. But we ask about him, and he had 44 guides. And let me tell you why. Because he is giving advice to a large number of people, and he needs that many different, I guess, experts around him in order to give that advice. Isn't that interesting?
It's very interesting. I've never heard of anybody with 44.
I hadn't either, but it makes sense because I know what he does. You know, he gives advice on all sorts of stuff. You know, I mean, he doesn't know anything. I mean, he's in the medical field, so he just knows medicine. But it comes through him. He's very, very good at giving, especially yes and no answers. And over the years, we've honed it and gotten much better at getting advice from the spiritual side through the guides. And it's just interesting that when there's the need up to, at least in his case, up to 44 different areas of guidance can be there. And I mean, because he'll give advice to all sorts of stuff that he doesn't know himself, but obviously spirit guides are assigned to him to help him give correct advice. And his advice is very, very accurate.
He's no doubt a special channel.
They must have high level guides assigned to him.
Yeah, to have that many guides assigned to him, he's a special channel. I feel humbled to have. Albert told me I have three, and I've met one other one. But I guess maybe there are others, like Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, as I mentioned in my third book, who does help me coach with my writing. So I think there are other people who come in when they're needed at particular stages of my life. But Albert has told me he's been with me since birth, so he hasn't rotated, and I hope that he doesn't, because I would truly miss him if he decided to disappear from my life.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that Albert has shown you. The themes are pretty much consistent throughout all the different scenarios that he's shown you. And that's basically that there is no judgment on the other side. There's only understanding, and if we fail miserably here, we get another chance. That was the ancient Aramaic word of sin, is an archery term meaning to miss the mark. So if you sin here, even if you're a terrorist and blow up people or a mass murderer, you always get a second chance. So it's very, very interesting that the theme is always the same.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that he has emphasized over my encounters with him. And that's basically because, I was raised as a Roman Catholic, as a Christian. And of mm-hmm. course, I know what the church taught me as a child is that, God made all these rules for us to follow. If we breached them and we didn't make amends, then we could end up in a horrible place. We'd be judged by God and sent to hell if we had committed some very bad sins. So that was sort of what I was raised with. And so he really wanted to hit me over the head with this new revelation, which is, no, God doesn't judge us. There's no punishment mm-hmm. in the afterlife, and we're here to learn and experience things. And no matter what we do, no matter how far off course we go, including terrorists who blow up people, when we get back to the spirit side, there's no judgment or punishment. The only judgment, in effect, is our own judgment of what we've done in our lives. And so it's a learning experience every life on earth, and we use that as a basis to plan future life. So you're right. We do get a second chance, and a third, and fourth, and as many chances as we want, until we sort of get it right in terms of our experiences on this plane. So it's very much very different concept from what I was raised with. That's why he keeps on bringing it back to me through all the astral adventures I had with him. He wants to make sure that it's firmly set in my mind, and for other people who read my books that look at this as the way it works. So try to be a good person, but don't worry about it if you go off course, because you will get another chance.
That's true. And I wanted one of the, I guess, angels that Albert introduced you to was Lucifer. And, you know, most people misunderstand Lucifer to a great extent. If you've ever read some of the esoteric literature, you'll understand that Lucifer was the angel over 36 planets, and he petitioned the administration to have more free will for those planets. And then that was granted. And basically, Earth being one of those planets, we became a free will zone. And what happened there was we just forgot who we were and who we were connected to, and some pretty atrocious things happened. But and then the ascension, this is important to understand, the ascension is the reversal of the Luciferian rebellion. But Lucifer, as an angel, was not, you know, not evil, not, you know, not basically, they were just doing an experiment. And why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about what Albert, what happened when Albert introduced you to Lucifer? Because my understanding of Lucifer is much more close to what you're saying in your book than what is, you know, commonly believed.
Yeah, well, Albert, see, he surprised me on one of my trips to the spirit side. He said, "I'm going to introduce you to Lucifer," and I was taken aback a bit, because he had told me before that Satan did not exist, and of course, there's a lot of people on our planet who equate Lucifer with Satan, and I was aware of that, and so I was very curious, and so I went to meet him, and he was a very wise, compassionate soul. He said he'd been badly maligned over the years by a lot of humans who considered him to be a fallen angel, the personification of evil, mm-hmm. equated him with Satan. He said that couldn't be further from the truth. He said that he really works hard to try to curtail evil on our planet, and that he's very much you know, one of God's benevolent angels, and he's nothing close to what some people have described him as being, the prince of darkness, you know, the personification of evil. So he said that he actually, and he described to me what he does do. He says that he tries to curtail evil on the planet by sending strong thoughts and messages to various people to prevent disasters or evil doings, you know, mm-hmm. over the history of the world. And he gave me a couple of examples. He said that he claimed to be instrumental in sending strong messages to Abraham Lincoln to convince him to outlaw slavery. And mm-hmm. he said that during the Second World War, he had sent strong messages to the Nazi scientists who were working on the development of the A-bomb to drag their feet so that the bomb right. would not be ready for Hitler to use during the Second World War. And you can imagine what would have happened if Hitler had access to the A-bomb in the Second World War. And then he also said,
we'd all be speaking German.
and then he said, here's an interesting one, listeners may have to be as old as I am to appreciate the next one, is he said that during the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962, that was when Soviet Union was trying to deploy missiles in Cuba, which is only mm-hmm. 90 miles off the coast of Florida.
Right.
And President Kennedy said, no, we're not going to let you do that. And he employed a naval blockade to keep the Russian ships from bringing
right.
the missiles
yeah.
in. And it was like a real standoff, like, what's going to happen? He said that he basically convinced Nikita Khrushchev, who was the leader of the Soviet Union, to not push the buttons to start World War III. So
right.
anyway, that's
yeah, that
what
was
he
a
said.
Very dangerous time. I don't think people realized how close we came at that point to having a nuclear war.
Oh, I think it was very close. And in any event, so those are just three examples he said of how he has
yeah.
Staved off some awful wars and other matters on our planet. And so he really wanted me to get the message to people that, look, I'm not an evil fallen angel.
No.
I'm a benevolent angel, and I work hard to
mm-hmm.
do exactly the opposite of what people have prescribed for me, you know, in the past. And so that was an amazing story, and I was glad that I met him.
Well, if you ever meet him again, you ought to talk to him about, you know, the Luciferian rebellion idea. You know, more free will, which is really an interesting idea. It was an experiment. And I think what we were told is that they never realized we would go so far, cut off so far from who we were, I mean, who our true nature was in spirit, and not be able to just so dense down here that we can't hear the messages or understand why we're here. But, you know, all that's changing. I mean, after the ascension, and that veil will be lifted. We'll remember our past lives. We'll remember who we are. We'll remember why we came here. You know, it'll be a lot easier.
Yeah, it certainly would be easier if we could remember all that. But in the meantime, we have to struggle with this fog of amnesia that we're saddled with as we incarnate here. And so it's very difficult. It's a real struggle to try to figure out why we're here and where we should be going and what we should be doing. You know, Albert said, I mean, and Albert doesn't tell me what I planned for myself and my life plan, because he said it would be too easy for me. But that's just part of the challenge of being a life on Earth, is having to have free will to make decisions and having to struggle without knowledge of our past lives or where we came from.
So really, Lucifer might have had a pretty good idea, because we don't have the direct guidance that we would normally have, we really do have to grow within ourselves and develop our own sense of right and wrong and really, really have an more interesting experience here than if we knew everything beforehand. You know, it's a very interesting experiment indeed. And, you know, what I figure is we'll just wake up one day, like after we die, we'll wake up and go, oh, boy, that was an interesting dream. You know, like it's also not real permanent down here. You know, everything's pretty transient. I want to talk a little bit about something that each soul has, and that's they have probably several guardian angels. And what's interesting, I have two male warrior class guardian angels, and I saw one of them in a dorm room when I was in college, and that ended my idea that I was agnostic. But men often have female guardian angels, and women often have male guardian angels. Isn't that interesting?
It's very interesting. And I actually met one of my guardian angels in one of my trips, and she was a lovely lady, Anna Peel, beautiful, breathtakingly beautiful. And, you know, very compassionate soul. And she basically said to me, you know, look, at everyone has guardian angels. I'm one of yours. I'm here to sort of make sure that you don't suffer an untimely accident and have your physical body die before your soul is ready to leave. Because our souls always have the ultimate final decision as to when they leave the incarnations. But because there's so many people running around on our planet with free wills, often there can be circumstances where unforeseen to our soul that our physical bodies might die, and that's when our guardian angels step in to prevent an untimely death. And she said she can do that. Typically, they try strong intuitive messages to make us change our course, but they can actually physically intervene if necessary. And she gave me the example. She said, you know, if you're booked to fly on a flight that they can foresee will end up crashing, they will send a message to me to say, you know, change your plans, you know, book another flight, whatever. And if that doesn't work, they can actually intervene to cause my tire to go flat on the way to the airport so I miss my flight. And so that's just one example. She said that they do it all the time. Most of the time, people aren't even aware that they've been saved by divine intervention, and they just think they've been lucky. Usually there's no luck involved, and I said to her, well, you couldn't have been very busy saving my bacon over the years, because I don't recall any near misses. And then she pointed out three of them to me where there she was intervening, and after she mentioned them to me, I thought, okay, I thought I was lucky at the time, but I guess now I know my guardian angel was there to help me. So it's very comforting to me to know that we have guardian angels who are there to help us out. And, of course, when people do die, they die all the time. It's not because their guardian angels are asleep at the switch. It's because their souls have decided this is the exit point they wanted to take, time to leave this incarnation. So very interesting, very comforting. I didn't ask her about the gender of the guardian angels in terms of people on Earth, but certainly she was a woman, and you mentioned that you have male guardian angels, so there may be something to that, Susan.
Well, they say never drive faster than your guardian angels can fly. I want to tell a quick story about one of my employees. We were in surgery, and she told me she was going to Aruba, and I had this reaction which, you know, I said, well, you could die, you know. That's what I said. I just blurted it out. And anesthesia says, why are you saying that? You know, like, what do you mean she could die? And so I said, well, because she has spiritual hearing, too. I said, well, did you ask if you should go? And she goes, well, I don't really ask. I just go and see what happens, you know. And well, this is what happened. On the way, she called Uber to get her to the airport. And on the way, a truck almost hit them, and they ended up in the ditch with a flat tire. So there you go. There's your flat tire, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then she got another Uber cab, and she went to the airport, and she went outside to do her luggage, forgetting that Aruba's international. So she stood in line for a long time, and when she got up there, they said, no, you know, you can't use this line. You have to go inside. So she went inside. There was a long line, and not one person would let her go in front of them, which is hilarious. Think about that. Not one person would let her go in, you know, because usually somebody will let you go in front of them. And then she missed her flight. Okay, so anyway, she's meeting some friends down there, and what happens is very interesting. She finds out that they go to a bar, and they get, I guess, a date rape drug put in their drink, and one of them ends up raped, beat up, and in the hospital. And she swore to God she would be in the same position. Do you see?
Wow. That's,
isn't that amazing?
That's a great example of guardian angels at work. No,
it really
that.
Is, because,
yeah.
You know, and from my reaction is you could die. That's what I heard. You know, you could die. And did you ask? You know, did you ask if you could go? Because, like I said, she has spiritual hearing. She could hear yes or no. And then she ends up not going at all. She decides to go visit her father instead. You know, she didn't even go at all because she could have gone the next day. But she decides that Aruba's not for her. So anyway, it's just, you know, it's just very interesting at all the things that occurred to keep her from getting on that plane.
Well, they have many mechanisms they can use to get the result that they want, and
right.
So they're obviously working overtime on that one, but it all worked out in the end, and so she should be thankful.
It did, and you know what? The airline didn't even punish her with the, you know what I mean? They didn't take $100 away or whatever. They because of everything, they just made it okay. You know, they just allowed her to use her money for the other flight. So there wasn't even any financial, you know, somebody made the decision when she was changing flights not to deduct the $100 or whatever. And I think that's guardian angel too.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
That you don't have a financial thing happen.
Yeah,
so.
It seems like some people may say all these things are just coincidences, but they're not. They're all orchestrated
no.
by a guardian angel.
Well, not that many things can happen.
Yeah.
I mean, plus she knew. I mean, she knew that there was something up just from my reaction. You know, my reaction is, are you crazy? It was so funny because the anesthesiologist was hilarious. He was going, what do you mean? How could you say that to her? But anyway, we told him later what happened. It was funny. But that's, you know, my reaction right at first on something, and it's an emotional, it's an emotionally based reaction based on the danger that somehow I know is there. You know, I don't know how I know it. I just know it.
You were getting guidance from beyond the veil, Susan.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe the guardian angel is working through me, too. You know, like, going, get her straightened out here. You know, like, she's not supposed to be raped, beat up, and maybe die in Aruba, you know. So anyway, yeah, well, you know, but when you travel, it is really true. There are more dangers out there when you travel international than there used to be. You have to understand that that really is true. And that, you know, so anybody going international really should check in with prayer or meditation, or if you're not comfortable with that, maybe even asking someone with spiritual hearing that, you know, to make sure that it's a good time to go. I mean, look at all the attacks in Paris. Look at all the stuff going on around the Olympics. You know, it's not just easy to travel anymore, especially overseas.
No, I couldn't agree more, Susan. And it gives me pause every time I'm thinking of planning a trip, especially overseas to Europe or whatever, and you wonder, now, am I going to be in the airport when somebody decides to blow themselves up? You know,
exactly,
it's happening
yeah.
all the time, and you just never know.
And I think they're hiding it from us, but there's electromagnetic shifts right now because of certain Planet X and some of the other things that are occurring in our solar system. And planes are losing electricity. And they're it's interesting because they're blaming it on the pilots. You know, they're saying the pilot had decided to take the whole plane out with him, but which really isn't true, not at all. I mean, the actual listening to the black box and, you know, understanding probably the pilot, that German pilot, had when the power went off, he was locked because the co-pilot had gone to the bathroom. He was locked in the or actually the pilot went to the bathroom. The co-pilot was locked in the cockpit, and oxygen went very quickly. They determined from the black box that he was breathing very, very slowly, not quite rapidly. You know, if he was going to crash a plane, he would be breathing much more rapidly, but he was breathing slowly because he was unconscious. So, you see, but anyway, they're not letting people know that there's a lot of electromagnetic stuff going on that where planes could lose power.
The bottom line, Susan, is that the best way to travel is through astral projection.
No
security checkpoints, no airplanes, no airports, no nothing. But of course, that's just not something that is going to happen to everyone very soon.
I think if people just ask, even if you do it with a pendulum or muscle testing, just ask if it's safe to travel. I mean, the majority of I'm not trying to scare anybody. The majority of travel is very, very safe, obviously. But I think it's a good idea just to check so that you won't have to have the frustration that my employee had, you know, or, I mean, your guardian angels will take care of you. And I think there were books written around 9/11 about all the weird things that happened to people that kept them from going to work that day. And yeah. Wasn't it something like the buildings were, much emptier than they should have been that day? I think that's true.
Yeah, I've read about that as well. And one example in particular about the guy who was working at the very top floors of that bond trading company. I can't remember the name of it. And before he got there, he had severe intestinal cramps. Had to turn around and go back. And had he continued on, he would have been wiped out by the 9/11 attack. So that's just one story that I remember.
I've had a couple of times where it turned out that I was in danger, and I got very, very sick very quickly. And, of course, I have the advantage of having all sorts of, hearing myself and then people around me who can confirm for me. And, yes, I was not supposed to go certain places. One of them was a breast implant symposium I was supposed to speak at in Dallas just recently. I got deathly ill right before that, and it was because it wasn't safe for me to go. So that was interesting. But when you get, and that's the other thing, when you get sick quickly, you know, not like the little bit of a sore throat that then you can treat with some zinc or vitamin C. Really sick really quickly. Sometimes it's your soul trying to stop you from going somewhere.
No, absolutely. That's right. And most people do not recognize that. Obviously, you're enlightened and you recognize that there's some reason for that happening.
I'm a doctor. You don't get sick that quick. You know, I mean, it starts out, you know, you're a little bit tired, you have a little sore throat, you know. I mean, to get terribly sick terribly quickly is, for most people, is unusual if you're healthy. You know, your baseline is healthy. Usually there's warning signs before you get sick. But when there's no warning sign, it's happened to me enough times that I recognize it. Like, wait a minute, you know, this isn't, but, you know, on the other hand, I was sick, and I was guided to get travel insurance. Do you see what I mean? It was like, because if I wasn't sick, then I couldn't honestly cancel the trip and get the travel insurance. But I was very sick. I mean, my doctor here wrote me the note because I actually was sick. I had a fever and everything, you know. So, I mean, I guess they do that to keep you honest, too, so that your travel insurance really is kicking in.
Well, I have a similar story. Last November, we booked a trip to Mexico for a vacation in January. And I usually don't get travel insurance, but something sort of told me that I should get travel insurance. So I got the travel insurance. And then we find out a week later that our little dog has diabetes, and we have to cancel our trip to Mexico. Thankfully, I had the travel insurance, and I got all my money back. So that was just one of those things. And that's something I don't usually do. But it was a message from my guides, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, they knew. Exactly.
Yeah.
So you've got many other stories in here. Is there one that is a favorite of yours that you'd like to mention?
Well, one of the things that really sort of stood out in my mind was my conversation with Gaia, the consciousness of Mother Earth. That happened when Albert took me, one of our astral travels, took me to a cavern underneath the North Pole. And I was standing there with him and wondering why he'd brought me here. And all of a sudden, I hear a voice, and it turns out to be Gaia, the consciousness of our planet, of Mother Earth. It surprised me a bit. I know a lot of people have maintained over the years that our planet does have a consciousness. I never quite signed on to that until I actually had a conversation with her. And so she was a very, very compassionate and fiercely person, fiercely determined to protect her planet, protect her flora and fauna, and try to keep her ecosystem in balance so that everyone could enjoy it. And she was quite dismayed at the way humans have been abusing her, everything on the surface of her planet, her atmosphere, with our pollution and our spilling chemicals into her oceans and rivers and following her atmosphere. And she was, very concerned about this because it damaged not only, Mother Earth herself, but also the other animals on our planet. And she really wanted everyone to live in peaceful harmony the way she had originally intended way back when, before humans became so invasive. And so it was really a heartfelt message. She really said, look, guys, you really have to stop being so abusive to your environment and to the other animals on the planet because it's just not right. Nobody gives humans the right to sort of take over the whole planet and do with it what they will without any consideration for the other animals or for the environment that they live in. And so it was really quite a heartfelt message. And she said, and then much to my surprise, she said, I can actually fight back. I can actually change the number and intensity of natural disasters that happened regularly on the planet, like earthquakes, floods, volcanoes, and so on. And she said that she has been doing that a bit more of late. She wants to fire a warning shot across our bow to get humans to wake up and realize that they have to change their ways or it could end badly for us. So it was really quite a message, which I was happy to pass on in my book. I mean, I know there's more and more people over the recent years who are becoming concerned about our environment and the pollution and concerned about the abuse we inflict on the other creatures on our planet. But there needs to be more and more awareness of this and more people to sign on to the cause to change our ways before we end up, destroying all life on our planet. So that was a very eye-opening message I got from the consciousness of our beautiful planet.
Well, there's a number of people and also spiritual messages coming through that we're headed for a split in the timelines here. One timeline takes us through the ascension, where we basically are at a higher level of vibration, that the terrorists and the war and the pollution and all the negative, selfish things no longer exist at that level, and that the planet will be, a good place to inhabit and one that is safe for humans. And then, of course, the other timeline goes the other way, where it's more like the Mad Max scenario, with massive pollution and massive danger and war and whatever. And that probably is coming. I mean, that sounds to me like that it's probably not too far in the distant future. So based on, the way you're thoughts and actions are taking you, you'll end up in one of these two scenarios.
Yeah, and that's entirely possible. The Mad Max scenario is very disconcerting, and I hope that we don't get there. I've asked Albert many times, we seem to be on such a course heading towards that. I said, is there any really hope for our civilization, for humanity? He said, there's a lot of awful things happening, he said, but he's optimistic that we'll eventually be able to change our ways and avert that kind of disaster. So I'm really, he didn't give any timelines, he just said that he's optimistic that we can do so. But part of that is for having people like yourself, Susan, and people who host radio shows and write books and speak at public gatherings to get the message from spirit out to our fellow humans to try to change the ways, to become more aware of where we should be going, try to raise our vibrations and discard our negative emotions. That's what we really have to do. we have to embrace love and get rid of our negative emotions, and that's the solution, the direction that we need to head to avoid disaster. And if we can do that, things will go well. So time will tell, I think, Susan, but we all have to sort of pull together. And those of us who are aware, really, it's incumbent on us to try to get the message to our fellow humans.
Yeah, you know, I've been doing the radio show for almost 20 years now, and I've never been allowed to suspend it. It's really funny. Every time I've asked, it's, nope, you got to keep doing it. So evidently, you're right. The message has to get out, and people who are, you know, waking up to their own, you know, increased level of consciousness and awareness do need to be able to find and connect with authors such as yourself. And I think there is pretty much a revolution in consciousness research and in consciousness education. And, I mean, compared to what it was back in the 80s, it's just incredible. And a lot of people are waking up, and that's what they said would happen when a certain percentage of people wake up, then the planetary ascensions and everything can get on and, you know, be done. It's interesting because Jesus thought that the ascension was going to be you know, around his lifetime, and he was saying that he didn't realize that it was going to be so much later, and so it just goes to show that many of the spiritual adepts and masters have known about the ascension, but not. Again, I don't think anybody knows exactly when it's going to be.
Yeah, well, I did have an experience which I described in my second book about actually traveling astrally to the new Earth in a higher dimension, where uh-huh. I met with some people who had actually done the ascension, and they were actually the descendants of a civilization way back when who had done a mass ascension to the new Earth, and so mm-hmm. it's happening piecemeal. Not sort of all together, but it is happening here and there by people who managed to raise the vibrations and ascend up into the new Earth. And so that's encouraging to know. You know, the simple solution for that is, you know, fully embrace love and you can raise your vibrations, and which isn't easy for most of us to do because the negative emotions that are so common to humans that flare up every mm-hmm. day, like, you know, fear, anger, hate, and so on, they're very hard to curtail, but we really have to make an effort to do that. And if we can, you know, the violence on our planet will decrease substantially, and we'll all have a happier place to live. But that's the mission that we have in front of us, and that we have to get out to everyone else to try their best and to help them awaken to the goal that we have to reach.
Yeah, one of those communities was the Mayans. I think the Spanish soldiers were on their way, and the Mayans had no way to protect themselves, so they called everybody out into a field, and everybody went into meditation, and the shamans led them into a higher state of vibration. They simply disappeared. And then there was another colony, I think in Virginia, where the same thing happened. And I don't know whether they ascended or were wiped out, but again, fires were burning, and I mean, it was like everybody left all at once, and they didn't even turn the fires off. You know, it was very odd that many people could disappear without a trace. With no evidence of absolutely no evidence of violence or anything. So probably when a large number of people disappear with no evidence of anything bad happening, they went to the new Earth.
I think that's likely the case, and it doesn't sort of seem to happen en masse anymore, but it does happen sort of individually, and Elvin
right.
says that, everyone can get there. I mean, you can get there, I can get there, we just have to follow the path. And so one day you may just disappear, Susan.
Yeah. Well, I've been told I'm going to come back and forth. So, because I still have a job here to do with the breast implant problems, you know. So they actually say I'm going to be going back and forth. I'm going to have houses in both dimensions, I guess. So that should be interesting, but... That sounds
well,
like something
it is
I would
possible,
do.
And I actually met a soul in one of my journeys this lady had made the physical ascension to the new Earth, and then she, when her body on the new Earth died because it's still in the physical plane, she was back in spirit side, and I said to her, so, are you going to reincarnate back on the new Earth? And she said, No, because I want to go back to this earth and reincarnate there because I want to help my fellow humans who are still struggling with all the with all their journeys. And so, you can actually sort of go back and forth between the two dimensions, and a lot of souls are doing that because there's a lot of challenges here on our earth, not so many on the new earth.
Well, what we've learned, like your soul in the fifth dimension is always aware of what you're doing, okay? But your soul is also living in the fifth dimension. It's a very stable dimension. They have buildings and houses, and they even have a form of surgery up there. So, you know, we can't understand it down here because we don't have a dimension below us where we're aware of, you know, because there is no dimension below us that we could be aware of. But evidently in the higher dimensions, like if you have a monad in the seventh dimension, it's aware of the souls, and the souls are aware of what we're doing down here. So I think as long as you're a dimension above, you can maintain some sort of awareness of what's happening below.
Yeah, and that was my experience because the people I met with in the new earth, they were fully aware of what was going on in our earth. And then
right.
They were aware of our struggles and the obstacles we had to overcome, and they were very encouraging. They really wanted us to try to all make the ascension, so they were fully aware of it. So you're right; they are aware of what's happening in the dimensions below. But you're also right; there is nothing below our current dimension. We're at the bottom rung of the ladder,
which means there is no hell, which is what Albert was telling you. There is no hell. Hell was made up to scare people.
It exactly is. Yeah, there is no hell. It was invented by religious holy men over the years to instill fear into people, control them through fear. And it's worked wonders. It's done very well. It fills the pews in church every Sunday with people who feel they need to go to church to avoid hell.
Right.
And so it's worked wonders. But he says there is no hell.
Right, right. Well, we're coming up at the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Sure. My website is garnetschulhauser.com, which is hard to remember, but if you Google Dancing on a Stamp or Dance of Heavenly Bliss, you will get to my website. There's information about all my books. My email address is there. There's buy links where you can click on to get to Amazon and Barnes & Noble and some of the other places to buy my books. And there's also icons to get you to my social media sites like Facebook, LinkedIn, Google+, Twitter, and so on. And so all the information about what's happening in my life and my books is there. And you can also download a free excerpt and watch a book video for all my books. So that's the main source of information about me and my books. And if anyone has any questions or comments, Susan, they can certainly email me, and I do my best to respond to every email that I get.
Well, great. Well, thanks again for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
It has been a pleasure for me, Susan, and thank you for inviting me. I hope that we've provided some enlightenment to some of your viewers, and that's the real goal. We're both channeling spirit, so hopefully our messages get through to your listeners.
Well, thank you so much. This is Dr. Susan Kolb. We've been interviewing Garnet Schulhauser, his latest book, Dance of Heavenly Bliss, a continuation of, this trilogy of books giving us really good insight into what the big picture is and what we need to do here in order to learn our life lessons. Next week, we will be interviewing David Lowe, Universal Spirit Philosophy and Practice. And then on the 20th, Fran Stein, The Inner Heart of Reiki. Thank you very much for joining us. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show.